I'm joined now by Professor Monica Grady from the Open University, and your position is?
I'm Professor of Planetary and Space Sciences at the Open University. I've been there for about 3 years now.
And your main field of research interest is astrobiology.
Well, sort of. I've come into this from one particular direction. My real expertise is in laboratory-based astronomy. So this is where we study meteorites that have dropped out of the sky, and we try and understand from them how the solar system has formed, what the influences from stars have been on the material that made meteorites. And from that, and from studying organic compounds in meteorites, and also particularly meteorites that have come from Mars, I've really got interested in astrobiology and the search for life beyond the Earth. So that's a sort of way into it that a few years ago I never really thought I'd be doing.
It's fantastic going from, you know, following the field of planetary science and astronomy. We've gone from just knowing about the planets our own solar system to knowing about the existence of over 270 extrasolar planets. People have always asked the question as to whether life exists elsewhere in the universe. Now we know that the planets for them to live on exist. And the excitement that you mentioned about the Martian meteorite has sort of, you know, spurred things on a little bit more too, you know, prior to these discoveries. Tell us a little bit more about the Martian meteorite.
Yeah, I mean, things have come together over the last few years in an amazing way. I mean, a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, you'd have been regarded as an absolute fruitcake if you were spending your time doing research on looking for life beyond the Earth. But as you say, developments in understanding Mars and water on Mars, and especially looking for finding extrasolar planets, that's really pushed things forward. And what I've been doing for several years now is studying rocks that come from Mars. Now, the way they've come from Mars is an asteroid or a comet has hit Mars and made a big crater on Mars, and the rocks that have bounced off have then fallen on the Earth as meteorites. And a question that I'm often asked is, well, how do you know they're from Mars? How do you know they're not from the asteroid belt? And the main reason is that we know this is that when they get bounced off Mars, they get shocked, and gas from Mars's atmosphere gets trapped in the rocks, and we can melt the rocks and get that gas out again. It's identical in composition to Mars's atmosphere, so the rocks must have come from Mars. Now, having accepted that they come from Mars, we can say, well, let's study them and see what we can understand about Mars from them. They're all igneous rocks. This means they're rocks that have melted, they've come out of volcanoes, or they've been molten and solidified, so they haven't been laid down in water. So that tells us about Mars's primary igneous history. But a lot of them, although they were formed in water, have been altered by water. And there are minerals in them that have been broken down and turned into clay minerals. And that tells us about the temperature of the water and how long the water was there for. And then there are other groups of minerals that actually were laid down in water. They're called carbonates, and they were laid down like the chalk and limestone is laid down, although on Mars it's fresh water and not seawater. And we can study those. And a few years ago, there was a real controversy. It was 12 years ago now, in 1996. There was a discovery in a little patch of carbonates of this sort of little wiggly thing. It looked like a fossil. I mean, it wasn't wiggling, but it looked like a fossilized worm or bacterium. It was tiny. It was 200 nanometers, so 0.2 of a millimeter, no, 0.2 of a micrometer, so very, very small. And some scientists from America who found this thought it was a Martian fossil. Not many other people believe them. I mean, I don't believe it myself. But what it did was it made people really think, well, hey, you know, we've been maybe paying lip service to this idea of life on Mars, but, you know, maybe we are on the edge of actually finding it. And that really has driven the stuff forward in the last few years. And it's been a really exciting time to be working in this field.
It's an interesting point, though, that the first possible evidence, or at least this idea that the little wiggly thing, the little fossil found in the Martian meteorite, was, you know, possible evidence for life, although it's highly disputed by many people. It raises an interesting point, discovering this fossil bacterium in the Martian meteorite, or at least the alleged fossilized bacterium in the Martian meteorite, raised an interesting point that the life that we're likely to come across on extrasolar planets is not going to be life like you, me, the plants over there, or is likely to be bacteria or something else from the other domains of life.
Yeah, I mean, if there are really evolved creatures on other planets, we'd have seen them by now. You know, we'd have seen rabbits or dinosaurs or whatever. So it's likely that if life is there, it's going to be less evolved, less complex, based on single cells, some type of bacterium or archaean-type microorganism. Now, over the last few years, as well as learning more about extrasolar planets and possibilities of life on Mars, we've also learnt an enormous amount about life on Earth, and we've found life in many more niches on Earth than we ever dreamt of, at the bottom of the ocean, in hot volcanic springs, even trapped inside rocks. I mean, there's a whole set of organisms that live inside rocks. They're called cryptoendoliths, which is a long word, but you can break it down. It's very logical. Crypto means hidden, endo is inside, and lith a rock. So it's organisms hidden inside a rock. And there are lots of those in Antarctica. And we look at Antarctica as a very cold, dry, windy place. And Mars is cold and dry and windy. And maybe things like cryptoendoliths could live inside rocks on Mars. And that's a fascinating prospect. But it also leaves you with the concern of, well, how are you actually going to be able to identify them? It's going to be very, very difficult. I mean, robotically, you're going to have to get really close-up images. Well, you're going to have to strike it lucky to start with to find it. So this is one of the things where you think, well, hey, eventually we are going to have to send proper geologists there with their hammers to actually go and look at those rocks in great detail.
Sounds like you're asking for a ticket to Mars.
I'd love to go to Mars. I'd love to go to the moon. Won't happen for me, but it might be for my son or my grandchildren, and that's something to keep working for.
Well, we look forward to your and future generations' discoveries on life on other planets. Well, we are focusing largely on Mars, but what about the possibility of life on other planets that we know of in our own solar system, and maybe not necessarily limited to planets, but their satellites?
Yeah, I mean, we've concentrated on Mars because, you know, that's the number one place to look. But there are other places. And the second favourite place is Europa, which is one of Jupiter's satellites. Now, Europa is one of the brightest objects in the solar system because it's covered in ice, which reflects the sun's light back to us. That ice, though, is not a continuous sheet. It's broken up into plates, and between the plates there are other generations of ice. And there must be something below that ice to keep it moving, to keep it being built up. And it's thought that below that ice is an ocean of deep water, maybe a little bit salty water. And what's keeping the ocean liquid? And that's the heat of Europa's core, which is produced by the tug from Jupiter, Jupiter's gravitational pull. And that heat has to get into the ocean somehow. And it's thought, you know, possibly like hydrothermal vents on the Earth's ocean. And like hydrothermal vents on the Earth's ocean, in the dark, it was thought that there would be no life there, because life on Earth, it was always assumed, was based on photosynthesis, lived near the surface and used the sun's energy. But the stuff around hydrothermal vents, there are no plants there, but there's lots of animals, and they use energy from the making and breaking of chemical bonds by oxidation and reduction reactions, rather than ultraviolet energy from the sun. And so if you've got that sort of reaction going on the Earth's ocean floor, possibly you could have on Europa's ocean floor as well. It's a fascinating speculation. And it's resulted in several mission proposals, both to ESA and to NASA, for missions to go to Europa and other Jovian moons to look for life there.
Fantastic, as you say, wonderful subject of study, and we look forward to hearing more about it. We could go on for hours, I know, but we have to stop it there. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Bye.